Yeah, IOX is supported by Delaware County Solid Waste Management Center on State Route 10 in Walton, open Tuesday through Saturday for disposal and recycling, reminding patrons to keep trips to the center at a minimum due to higher than normal volume. Delaware County Solid Waste Management Center hours of operation and information about materials and disposal fees at 607-832-5800. 607-832-5800. 5800. IOX is supported by Margaretville Hospital and Mountainside Residential Care Center, a member of the Westchester Medical Center Health Network, offering compassionate care at a CMS nursing home. More information at 845-586-1800.
Hi, this is Carol Seitz, host of The Rabbit Hole, Monday mornings at 10 on WIOX Roxbury, live and local in New York's Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM, WIOXradio.org, and MTC Cable Channel 20.
You're listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20, and everywhere at WIOXradio.org, where it's easy to donate. If you like what you hear, you can also get WIOX on any smart device through the radio.fm app. This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John is out tonight, but every third Wednesday, we have Mr. Mead, Mr. Gary Mead, come in and talk about a different Catskills tree. Gary, how's it going?
Good. How are you guys?
Well, I'm fine.
Busy. I hear you guys doing a lot of custom sawing and taking trees down on people's property. And
yeah. We're
that sawmill's put another kind of whole spin on your whole business, your the Catskill Forest Association, and it's great because you know, people don't have to now. I mean, these logs that you're sawing would have either been cut up for firewood, or the pine would have been rolled over the bank to let rot, and you know, now you're able to make lumber for these folks.
Yeah, it's we're cutting down a 30-inch white pine over in Lake Hill, town of Woodstock, yesterday, and then we have a little winch or whatever that winches to the RTV or the gator and pulled it uphill, and the mill's up there. So yeah,
The thing about logging is, you know, I have people call me all the time. Oh, I just cut a tree on my property. Well, get it down here and I'll saw it. I mean, these things, you know, weigh 2 tons. I mean, what are you going to do?
Yeah,
you don't go and throw in the back of your pickup and you know, it's a hard for people to conceive that, basically. And I said, gee, if you want it sawed, well, I want to give it to you. I said, you know, it's going to cost you money to give it to me because I got to hire a truck to go get it and whatever. And but you know, it's a it's a thing where people don't quite understand the concept of the weight of these things.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, granted, a white pine isn't as heavy as a white oak, but man, they're all heavy.
They're all heavy enough.
Once I get them to the mill, I got my Super 8s and my forklift, and I can move them around like matchsticks. But
and they're dangerous.
And they're
there's
dangerous.
There's a lot to do, just cutting them down and, you know, being careful and all that. There's a lot that goes on, so.
Yeah, I don't cut them. My son cuts them down, but I have no part in cutting them. I just, you know, I took the log of, game of logging, and,
yeah.
You know, when I took that 12, 15 years ago now, when you first started,
yeah.
Soren was there.
That wasn't us. That was way before then. That was maybe 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, I took a cherry tree that had like an 8-foot lean, and we tipped it over in the opposite direction with the wedges and, you know, the right kind of cut. But, you know, I'm not – once they're on the ground, then, you know, actually once they're to my mill, then they're my babies then. But, you know, I was always going to get a little picker and run around and try to pick this stuff up. And I have stuff at the mill that I haven't had time to saw, so, you know, I don't want more in there. And now that I'm phasing down and you know, putting the place on the market. And actually my new company is Gary Mead Gallery, LLC. Fruitful Furnishings has been shut down after 42 years having that company. I am on a new journey, and it's called Gary Mead Gallery, LLC.
Yeah.
I'm a one-man band.
One-man band show.
If you, that's it, and that's how I originally started, and, you know, I don't have employees anymore. I got no problems with the state and unemployment and workers' comp and, you know, bad attitudes and all that crap going in my life every day. And since last October, I sold my commercial accounts to a company in Kingston. And I didn't just close my company down. I went around, I took the new owner around and introduced him in three different states to four different customers I had. And
yeah.
You know, I keep calling everybody, you know, the new supplier and my old customers, and they're so happy. And like the first thing they told me, they said, especially the one out in Chelsea, Mass, they said, you know, you didn't have to do this. And I said, oh, yes, I did. Because just because I'm closing down, I don't want you to scurry around. You're still in business. I mean, you need the product. And because I'm not making it for you anymore, I want to make sure you guys all have a steady supply where there's no hiccup in your... I mean, it's hard enough business anyway. And then when you get a hiccup in it, I mean, you got to try, you know, 5-6 different companies and, you know, finally get... But, you know, everybody's happy. And I knew this guy that that bought the company. I interviewed, like, 3 different companies, and they seemed the most aggressive, and he was the youngest. So that gives customers longevity in the business, and they're all happy, so I'm happy.
Yeah.
And but we're talking about tamarack.
Tamarack or larch.
Larch.
Yeah, that's a strange tree.
I threw a term out to Ryan that he never heard, which is Holland pine. That's back, in the 60s and 70s on the farm, that's what we called it, Holland pine. Hmm. I never knew it as larch until I started, you know, my sawmill and all that. And tamarack, people, you know, said that to me, you know, 30 years ago. What kind of weed is that? You know, do you smoke it? I don't know. But anyway, it's a tree.
Yeah. It's supposed to be I think what I was reading up before the show, it's the Algonquian name for it. But you won't really be familiar with this tree in the Catskills unless it's been planted. The only native stand is a very few rare big swamps, one of which is near me in Ulster County.
Mm-hmm.
And it grows next to another tree, extremely rare, the black spruce, that likes swamp, that can tolerate swamps as well. And that's the only Native American larch I know of. Most of the others you're going to find out there are planted American larch or European larch. Well, Japanese larch. I don't know. I wouldn't know the difference if I saw a Japanese
larch. The black
larch.
Spruce are for, they're good guitar.
That's red spruce as far as I know.
Oh, red?
Yeah. Well, and up north it's better quality red spruce, but black spruce is a smaller tree, and the only way to tell the difference when I was at the ranger school in the Adirondacks was if it was growing near a swamp, it was black spruce.
Oh, okay.
It's very difficult. I don't remember. I'm sure if we had a dendrologist on here, he could look at the twig pattern or the buds, probably the buds or whatever, but
the
cones. Yeah, I don't remember, but it's so subtle.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wouldn't be able to tell, but
yeah.
You know, I know a lot about trees and wood, but I'm far from knowing everything. And you know, the more I learn, the less I realize I know. But anyway, I just keep, and that's the most exciting part about it, because if you think you're the best, it's only downhill from there. But if you always think you can get a little bit better, you know, it's like a new adventure every day.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing that, you know, I look back, you know, 40 years ago when I first started my company, and what a dumbass I was back then, you know. You know, it was just that drive and the willingness to learn and you know, the mistakes you make and whatever, because you know, I haven't worked for an employer for over 50 years, and you know, I at this point there's no way you're gonna you know, have me punch a time clock. That's never gonna happen for me. But you know, I was very fortunate to come as far as I did with, you know, just leaving the farm with the clothes on my back. And I have a love for the environment. I have and trees and animals, and you know, it's like I say, every day is an exciting adventure for me, and I'm so grateful for that. And now they don't have employees and running around like all that. I was telling Ryan on the ride up here, I'm probably in my life I've never been this relaxed. So I'm hoping I don't get struck down here. Anyway.
Yeah, that's why I always like the term practice instead of an expert. I wrote about this for the Catskill Forest Association a little while ago, but you know, the practice of forestry, the practice of law. It seems like today everyone's an expert, and to me, it's the opposite of being humble.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I don't know everything about forestry, that's for damn sure, and I don't know everything about arboriculture or anything like that, and that's why I like that term, practice, you know.
I like the term, when, you know, people look at it like work, but I don't call it work, I call it progress. Every day we make progress, you know, we go to work, but work seems to make it's like a four-letter word that, you know, people kind of gives them the willy jillies. But you know, I always told my employees, I said, we're coming here and we're going to do work, but we're going to make progress every day. I mean, that's our whole point of being on the planet. We need to make, everybody needs to put a little bit in, and we got to make progress every day. And if we all do this, and with love in our hearts, there's nothing that will stop that. There's just absolutely no power on the planet more powerful than that. But you know, I these turmerics, tamaracks.
Turmeric.
Turmeric is a that's what I put in my tea.
You can take that for your joints or something, can't you?
Well, it's good for, you know, pain, and you know, I have a lot of that, so. You know, my feet and ankles, but I put it in my tea in the morning, and it's the same as ibuprofen, but it's a natural remedy. But anyway,
it's an ironic tree because it's a deciduous evergreen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's, you know, I was talking to Ryan when we planned this show, and I said, why don't we talk about larch, tamarack, or Holland pine? He goes, yeah, because, you know, people think if they have a stand of them and they're just moving into the mountains here and they have some on the property they bought and they turn all yellow and the needles fall off, they get kind of panicky. But it's very natural. They're the only pine tree or the softwood that we have, the needles fall off. Because basically how you tell, and I have it in one of my children's books, my second tree book, Look Up, that they're educational books. And this is one point I put in the book. How you, do you tell a softwood from a hardwood? And I didn't put a little quote in there other than tamarack or or larch, but you know they don't need to know that. That will come later. But you know, if a tree holds its is green all winter, it's a softwood, and if it loses its leaves, it's a hardwood. Even though some of the hardwoods like poplar and butternut and basswood, they're softer hardwoods, but they're still stronger than pine.
Yeah.
And
well, it might be better to characterize them maybe as broadleaf versus needles.
Right.
You know what I mean? If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is tamarack or the larch tree with Gary Mead.
Call my name, ooh, so sweet, to make your kiss incomplete. When your mood is clear, you quickly change your ways. Then you say I'm untrue. What am I supposed to do? Be a fool who sits alone waiting for you. I see the light of your smile, calling me all the while. You are saying, baby, it's time to go. First the feeling's all right, then it's gone from sight. So I've taken out this time to say,
we got Stevie Wonder there. This is From the Forest, every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., talking about a different forest-related topic. Tonight's topic is the tamarack or the larch tree with Gary Mead from Gary Mead Gallery, LLC. Right, Gary?
That's it. Yeah.
Got it.
And I have the gallery and the mill is open. It would pay to call first, and, you know, the gallery is always open if you want to go down there and during the day. And I had to stop locking the gate, which breaks my heart. And we have a lot more people in the area now. And, you know, I caught a few of them on my cameras while I was having lunch, taking wood that they didn't pay for. And, you know, it was a little bit of a job to get.
They stole some wood?
They did. They stole some wood.
You mean steal? It took.
They took.
You know, we had a similar problem down in in Margaretville.
What I did is I just put I got their license plate number and I found out where they lived and I called them and I said, "You were at my mill or my gallery?" And oh yeah, and oh, we, by the way, we took a piece of wood that, you know, we're just doing whatever with it. And I said, "Well, let me know when you're not home so I can come up and visit your garage when you're not home. And maybe there's something in there you don't need that I want."
Right.
I said, "I don't know what you're just talk to me about, but, you know, I'm down there and I sell wood. I don't give wood away." He said, "Well, it was only a scrap." I said, "A scrap? You took a piece of lumber."
Right.
I mean, a scrap is a 1x1, you know, 8 or 10 foot, you know, off the rip saw. That I wouldn't care about, but you took a, I mean, they took a piece of, the one guy took a piece of black locust, and, you know, it was a 10-foot board, probably 8 or 10 inches wide. It was a $25 board.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I thought, you know, all the wood you had, I didn't think you'd miss it. No, whatever, but, you know, let me know when you're not home. I'm coming up.
Right.
So they pay for it, but still, I had to start locking my gate, and it kind of breaks my heart. I've never done it unless I went on vacation for a week or so. Then I'd lock the gate and whatever, and now I have to lock it every night, and it's a pain in my butt. But
yeah, there's two things I wouldn't leave around is wood and chainsaws in this area because they're highly and sought after. But, you know, you could go to Colorado where I went to school in Boulder and probably leave those two things out, or New Paltz where I grew up, and they would just stay there.
Yeah.
But you know what you can't leave out in Boulder, Colorado? A bike.
A bike.
They will steal your derailleur, your chain, your components. Right, they'll have Allen keys right with them. They'll take that whole thing off. If you got a good Shimano set on there, they know what to look for. So everyone's got their own kind of specific kind of thieves is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and right now it's wood.
In Delhi, someone took my ball hitch off.
Your ball hitch?
They took it right off the truck.
Yeah, I put mine in the truck after I get done using it because it's easy to take.
That was years ago, but yeah.
It's very easy. It takes 10 seconds and it's, you know, boom, boom, slides right out.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Larch.
That's life. Larch.
So what about this tree, Gary?
So it's a, I read about it years ago. I was telling Rye I had a job to do a custom post and beam house out of larch, and that's when I started really researching it because, you know, every tree has a different way that it needs to be handled. So I researched it and found out that if you cut larch, excuse me, in the wintertime, to de-stress it, you let it lay for 6 months. If you cut it in the summer when the sap's running through it, you have to let it a year. So these companies that cut larch, they're, you know, they have winter cut and summer cut, and they wait 6 months to a year before they saw it. And that's why it costs a little bit more than, you know, most other softwoods. And it's such a beautiful wood. It kind of looks like cherry. It's got the white sapwood and the red heart, and it's very durable outside. I mean, for fences and around gardens, and it won't last as long as black locust, but and it's not near as heavy. But you can put posts in the ground, and it'll last 30 to 40 years.
That's long enough, Gary.
Anyway, yep. And but the black locust, I mean, you're looking at 100 years, and they're still standing. So anyway, but it has a pitch in it that actually deters bugs and rot. You can't grow mold on it. And, you know, bugs won't bore into it because they can't stand the taste of it. And years ago when I was researching it, I found that out. And I also found out that in Germany, where they have large stands of these, because it's an imported tree. I mean, Holland pine, I just always thought that, you know, a lot of them were imported from Holland. But anyway, I found out over in Germany and that part of the world, they actually have plantations of this larch or tamarack, and they certain stands, they They make turpentine out of the pitch in the fall. When the trees in the fall, even pine trees, even if they don't lose their needles, the sap goes into the roots to store for the winter. And the tamarack, they put the sap down, but on the outside where the bole of the tree, and the bole is the first whatever, from the ground to the first limb, that's called the bole. So, but down at the base where it meets the ground, this sticky pine larch pitch, or whatever it's called, forms, and they go around, they harvest this, and they make turpentine. And then I found out from Rye tonight, too, that they do that with pitch pine as well to make turpentine. And but, it was interesting to learn that the plantations that they grow to make turpentine, the lumber is no good for, burying in the ground and using for posts, because what they're doing is they're taking, they're taking that deterrent from bugs and mold, and they're making it into turpentine. So forests that they plant for that type of deal goes, that's what the whole life of that tree. They might use it indoors, if they have to harvest a log here and there, or for trim on the house and whatnot. But if you don't plane it and sand it and finish it, it is the most splintery wood, because, we built the fence out of it, 25 years ago. And,
yeah.
And, it's nice when you first saw it. It's beautiful and nice and flat. And once the sun hits it and then the water gets rained on, then the sun hits it again, oh, my goodness, that stuff, it shakes up. And you don't want to run your hand on it and pet it, because it's not very friendly to pet.
Right. But
that was one of the most, that's the only thing about that tree that is kind of a little, but mostly what it was used for was, where we use pressure treated, they use larch. And, you could bury it in the ground, it just stays there and it doesn't rot. And it's a nice light wood, and it's so beautiful. I mean, you guys got a floor in the Forest Association building that was dried at my kiln. And when that, I actually sent it out before I put it in the dryer. Did I do that? No, I actually dried it first. It looked like pretzels. I mean, it was so twisted and warped and wavy, and I go, oh my God. And this is over to Hofer Lumber. He had a molder over there, and I had some white oak, I had some red oak flooring, I had some wormy maple I wanted. I had about probably 4,000 or 5,000 board foot of flooring I needed grooved up, and this little 300-foot order of larch got thrown in there. And when it went through his equipment, that stuff must, because it's not a piece of hardwood, wouldn't have flattened out with the rollers near as good as the larch, because it's a soft wood, and it's the whole system flattened it out, put the groove in it, come out the other end still looking like a pretzel. And when I handed it over to you guys, I think Neil Peckrow was doing the job. He said, and I handed it over to him. I said, well, good luck with this. And he goes, oh, my God. But he got that down, and it lays just as flat and beautiful. Yeah. And, you're able to push it back into shape. But that's the monumental thing about larch, is when you cut it in the summer, it has to lay for a year, because it's stressed. It's one of the trees that when you cut it, it gets extremely stressed out. And if you saw it right away, it warps and gets twisted. But it takes, in winter cut, it takes 6 months to kind of relax it. And the tree kind of goes like, all right, I guess I'm going to be flooring or something. So
yeah, right.
I just got to own up to that at this point.
Yeah.
But, You know, trees communicate and all plants communicate through the roots, which is pretty amazing. And when one tree is threatened, whether a larch or a maple or an oak, they'll send a signal out through, because most trees grow where there's more than one in the area. And they can send if they're being attacked by something, they can send a signal out through their roots that will, like the most monument, the easiest one to understand is the oaks. They have a tannin that is so bitter and distasteful that the worst critter on the planet will not eat it but they store it in their roots. And, you know, I read this book and it was monumental, but, you know, how trees communicate through their root system.
Yeah, that guy was talking about beech, I think, right? The secret life there?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. That's pretty amazing. But tamarack, larch, right now they're kind of yellowish, orangish, and the needles are falling off.
Yeah.
And, you know, don't panic and, you know, worry about it, because this is what they do. And they're a beautiful tree that should be admired and respected like every other. And, you know, they have their own little niche. And I don't think we have 2% larch in our mountains here.
Yeah, not even.
There's
the plantations.
Yeah, and they're very little.
A lot of them are on reservoir land.
Well, you see stands of them. You see yellow stands of them in the mountains because the DEC gave them to farmers when they were, 10,000. And, you know, every spring they would, you know, give them to farmers. And they would have to pay somebody to put them in. But, you know, they gave away mostly spruce and larch and pines,
yeah.
Red pine, and people plant them, and then they grow up. If you see mountain patches that are tamarack or larch right now that are going golden, they were planted. And I never heard of it until, you know, the show tonight, that Ryan said that there are native.
Yeah, Dr. Michael Kudish, who's been on this show, he's written the history of the Catskill Forest, and he has them located where these stands are, but they're extremely rare, that and black spruce.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, this is a boreal tree, so it grows up in the Adirondacks and Maine.
Yeah.
And it exists from basically the northern half of North America, and we're kind of in its southern range. It stretches into West Virginia a little bit along the Appalachian spine. But this is a really cold, hardy tree, like zone 3, negative 40 degrees it can handle.
Yep.
And it can tolerate extremely acidic soils in those bogs and really wet sites. So high soil moisture, high acidity. And, tamarack. Large.
Oh, I had a local fella in Arkville that was putting an addition on his shop. He cut them down. They're no good for firewood. And he come to my mail. He's, are you interested in these tamaracks? And I said, yeah, I'd love to have them. He said, well, so they're right up there. And I said, he said, I'll deliver them to you for, he said, what do you want for them? He said, I just want them off the property. He said, I'll leave and deliver them. And I said, he said, well, we just tipped them over today up by my shop there. I'm putting an addition on. They need the space. And, you know, they're 16, 18, 20 inch diameter logs. Beautiful. And I said, well, since you're bringing them in for free and I'm getting it for free, I'll go up there. He said, the trees and the log lengths with the limbs still on them. I said, I'll go up there after work tonight. And, you know, I left work an hour early, and it's about 3 years ago. And I limbed them all, cut them into log lengths. And next morning, they were at my mill. I had them sitting up on, I've had them out there de-stressing for about 4 years, but I was looking at them the other day, and I said, you know what, I think they're probably de-stressed enough, because these I'm not selling, and they're not going for anything except for putting a ceiling or a wall in my house out of this tamarack, and I want to have every species in our mountains in my house, so, you know, my house keeps getting a little smaller, a little bigger because of all this different wood I have. But, you know, I have it documented where each tree species in the mountain it came from. So there's going to be a tag on, you know, each wall or each ceiling or floor documenting the mountain that it come from. I found that people don't get the connection between our mountains and our furniture. It's like, you know, when people come to the gallery, I walk out on the porch and they'll see the floor in there and it's all these different hardwoods and, you know, they're walnut and ash.
We don't have many furniture factories.
No.
If you listen last week, Hugh Cannon from the College of Environmental Science and Forestry talked about the importance of family forest in New York's economy. And we're an exporter of raw material wood.
Well, we export more than we use
to furniture companies to Canada or China, and they send it back.
Yeah, we send it out, and they bring it right back to us. And that reminds me of a story that back when the foreign trade agreement was first signed, I didn't feel threatened because I had a dimension mill. And I said, China don't have any trees. How the hell are they going to, you know, they're not going to hurt us. So then I had, about 3 years into this thing, there was a guy from, I knew him from the Bronx, and he said, oh, hell, they come in with these huge sawmill barges. They go 6 miles out in international waters with our logs. They saw them out there in the ocean. They bring them back the following week and sell the wood, the lumber back to us. And I said,
wow.
Oh, shucks. That's probably going to hurt us.
Yeah, amazing, huh?
And, you know, I know the workers' comp on those ships were like, oh, man, the guy just cut his finger off. Well, he's shark food for kick him overboard.
Probably at your own risk, right?
Yeah, that's about it. But anyhow, it's tamarack is a wonderful tree. It's another species we have. And, you know, it's very exciting when you know, sawing and drying them is really, I just, for Mike Porter, I just dried, he had a tamarack up on his camp or something, or maybe by his house, I don't know, but he sawed it into half-inch strips and brought me, I don't know, maybe 300-400 board feet, 500, I don't remember, but, and they put a ceiling in their house, and, you know, his son-in-law, it's, I mean, but he handled that slowly, you know, like you're supposed to. And I mean, when you use, usually when you dry 4, 5, and 6/4, you know, some of the boards will twist and warp, but you know, for the most part, you know, the thinner it is, the harder it is to keep flat when it's in the dryer.
Yeah.
But what I did with Mike's stuff is I put it in, well, I didn't put it on the bottom because half inch boards can't take that stress, but I probably put it in the middle of, and put about at least a ton or two of weight on top of it so that it held it flat while it dried. But I mean, I was very happy the way that came out because, you know, ever since that floor that I dried for the Forest Association, I'm a little leery about who didn't de-stress their large before they brought it.
De-stressing,
it's very, very important. Huh. Well, I had a guy in Hubble Hill want me to put a post and beam out of larch, and, you know, I researched it and talked to him and said, you know, I found the logs, I put a lot of legwork in, and if I, you know, this was back 30, 35 years ago, and every time I did another tree species, I would completely, thoroughly investigate and find out everything about it before I dove into it, because, I mean, this could have, actually, this one job might have very well put me out of business if I did it wrong. And, you know, it was like a $50,000-$60,000 order, and for a post and beam constructed, huge beams, and I struggled finding out. Many mills I called, and finally Matt Hofer and Calicoon hooked me up with the right people, and I found the diameter logs to make, you know, 13 by 16, you know, 24-foot logs. I mean, that takes a big tree, man. And I finally found him, but I said, you know, I told the guy, we're going to have to wait. And he, oh, no, I need it right away. And I said, well, I handed a list to him. I said, if you can go have somebody else do it, because, you know, I've had people make me do stuff wrong, and it never works out for me too good.
Right. Yeah. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. with Ryan and John. John's out tonight, but we're talking to Mr. Gary Mead about the tamarack tree.
Picking up strangers, let me tell you about the dangers. You never know what they're out to get from you. Never know what they're gonna try to do. Picking up strangers, let me tell you about the dangers. Some are just common thieves, they say. Next thing you know, one'll steal your heart away. Sometimes this old life seems like a highway. It just keeps rolling on and on. And on that highway, you meet a lot of strangers, pass a lot of dangers on your way home. Picking up strangers, let me tell you about the dangers. If you don't like taking chances, then better keep moving on, my friend. Picking up strangers, let me tell you about the dangers. Some are just common thieves, they say. Next thing you know, one'll steal your heart away. Now let me tell you about the dangers. If you don't like taking chances, then better keep moving on, my friend. Picking up strangers, let me tell you about the dangers. Some are just common thieves, they say. Next thing you know, one'll steal your heart away. Now let me tell you about the dangers. If you don't like taking chances, then better keep moving on, my friend. Picking up strangers, let me tell you about the dangers. Some are just common thieves, they say. Next thing you know, one'll steal your heart away. Let me tell you about the dangers. If you don't like taking chances, then better keep moving on, my friend. Picking up strangers.
All right, that's Jim Lee. You remember the movie Urban Cowboy, Gary?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's in there. You know, I recently heard that John Travolta, obviously, was the lead character.
Yep.
But Patrick Swayze was competing for that role. I think it would have been a much better movie. Patrick Swayze would have been it. Come on. He's from Texas.
Yeah.
No? They picked John Travolta? Anyway.
Well, he had more followers than I think.
Probably. Yeah, he had the Saturday Night Fever thing going on in Greece.
Yeah. Because they kind of base things on where they're going to get the most volume out of. And they don't actually pick the best person for the job every time. They just they didn't.
Dirty Dancer came out and they said, shoot, man, we
should have had him.
We screwed up. The guy can dance too, damn. Anyway, so we're talking about tamarack with Gary Mead. Like we talk about a different Catskills tree every third Wednesday with Gary.
Well, there was a farm. Well, I learned this about 6 months ago. Goldie White's, where that building is, that was part of a farm. It was on both sides of the road. And, you know, it ran right up into where Spillion and that whole mountain was this one farm. I don't know the name of the thing, but I found out, and they were in this DEC program, and they planted 10,000 tamaracks one autumn. But some of these, if you want to see a beautiful tamarack up close, just pull into Goldie White's parking lot. They don't have to be open. I'm sure that nobody will shoot at you or anything, but just get out and look at those toward the road on the bank. And what I was told that, when they put the road in, of course, they cut a bunch of them down, but, across the road and on that farm, there's a whole band of them that go right up through the mountain there. Mm-hmm. But the ones by Goldie White's
tall.
They're 20, they're tall, and they're some 20, 24, 26 inch on diameter, and they're...
Better the sight, the taller they get.
And they're open, and they're,
Remember the ones in a show can, that people have been commenting about that have been cut across from that deli?
No.
On the right, as you're heading east towards mm-hmm. Kingston, there's a lot of trees that were cut. I think some may have been spruce or larch, I can't remember, but... these are 120-foot tall trees, but the site is so good there, they just grow so tall,
Was that down by...
In Shokan, right before Shokan, before Turf and Timber.
The Arbor Art?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, remember how tall those things were?
Yeah.
Ridiculously tall.
But I thought they cut them because they were diseased.
They could have been. They were never thinned. See, when they planted those things, they were planted on a spacing like forest industry does, with the intent of thinning. But if you don't thin, they just whittle down to a Q-tip crown, and then they're done.
Well, they get too crowded in it. It's like, putting 30 people in, a double-wide trailer and thinking they're going to be okay, but you can't survive. You got to have space. You have to be able to breathe.
Right.
And you have to have that. So, after 20 years... 15 years after these trees were planted, the reason they planted them so close together because, when I was back on the farm, between all the other shit we did, we would pick up and on weekends and for the neighbors that bought these abandoned farms, and we plant 10,000 trees in a weekend. Fred Lanzi and Burton and my brother Wayne, Gene, and myself, and we took a pickaxe and we didn't use the sharp end. We used the wide end, and we just jam it into the ground, at a high angle, pull it back, open up the ground, put this, and we had a backpack with, trees, and we just pull one out, out of these packs, and we put it in there, and we pull the pickaxe out, stomp it with our heel, take two steps, and do another one.
Right.
But, 6 feet wasn't but they planted them close together in the beginning because they expected that a lot of them were going to die.
Yeah.
But if they didn't die, all they did was compete against each other. And there's whole mountains of spruce up there. There's one over on Marshall's, which we didn't plant those. He put tamarack over there and they were thinned out, and they were taken care of, and that's a beautiful stand now, and they're getting nice and big and tall, and they were in an old abandoned pasture.
Yeah, so, I was in a plantation last week up in Stamford, and I think afterwards the guy wasn't happy with me, and I don't blame him, but he was like, should I thin these out? And I'm like, this whole thing is as good as dead. They were never thinned out. The site was okay. And their crowns had just died back so much, so it's not worth doing anything at this point. Just let it for the deer. There was deer bedded in it already. We walked right up on them.
Mm-hmm.
But, some of these whole stands are just, there's nothing to be done.
Well, the spruce in New Kingston, I feel so bad about that. While we were on the farm, it was healthy looking, and now it's just like, they were never thinned and taken care of, and. We have to become super stewards, and if we don't do it, nature's just going to take over and do what it does. And
I'll meet you halfway, and it's not just caring; it's having a market, and there's no market for it. And people need an economic incentive, and there's no low grade market, so people just have not had the incentive to thin these trees. There's no paper pulp market or anything like that. Or wood chips in the Catskills.
Well, just to knock them down for the deers to browse on the buds.
Yeah, have you ever tried cutting in those stands, Gary?
No, I haven't.
They get hung up. I mean, it's just so impractical to work in. I mean, even girdling trees, the dead limbs are right to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's hell on earth.
Well, if you're going to plant 10,000 trees, 10 years later, you start thinning them out. You don't wait until they're so crowded that there's no hope for them.
Right.
That's what I'm talking about. Trying to thin them out after it's too far gone, that's not stewardship. And if people don't understand about them, then they tend to, they have to feel for them and understand them. And, I mean, that's what's so great about the Forest Association is it's so educational. And if you want to get an education about wood, you come to my gallery, make an appointment, and I'll spend 2 hours with you, and it'll go by in 10 minutes, and I will explain to you so much about wood and bark and everything there is to do with wood that your head might be spinning when you leave, but, we'll both feel pretty good about it. All right, well, I wrote a poem, 11 or 11:30 on 10/15/20. I was up late, and I was, I don't have a mill anymore, so my hours are, when I want to work, I work. If I want to work till midnight, I work till midnight, but I think I come home around 10:30 that night. I was in an exceptionally good mood, and I wrote this poem called I Love You. The reason I live is for the love that I give. A messenger of giving is my will to live. There is nothing in the past to date comes close to this. And know what? Ones that do not live love are losers. We struggle and fight each day to survive. The privileged, instead of being kind, have lost the true meaning for mankind. I do not hate them because no room in my heart and soul for such things. They made me scared and afraid for years. I realize there is no good reason for this. Such nonsense is just meaningless. Telling you it's complicated and such, just follow your hearts and love till the end. That, my friends, will change our world. Love in hearts and souls, impeccable, more powerful than anything on earth. One's ability to live in a pandemic with so much confusion and hate. I just wanted to tell you all, love so deep, there is no room for hate. That is sure to make one feel safe. And that's my poem for the night.
I just wanted to say real quick that there's a lot of press going on about this, but on the episodic hemorrhagic disease, EHD, that's attacking deer, just to remind hunters that because bow season's in full swing and we're going to be entering gun season, but this is a disease now that's being found quite a bit in Hudson Valley, and I'm sure it'll come to the Catskills, maybe not this year, but kills deer within 8 to 36 hours. And it's spread by gnats or midges between, not between the deer themselves, but between these insects. And it only affects deer, so people cannot get EHD.
And it's not transmitted to humans, yeah?
No. I mean, the DEC still recommends not eating a deer that looks sick, no matter what.
Yep.
What are the signs? Common signs are swelling of the head, neck, tongue, and lips, loss of appetite, weakness, and loss of fear of people. And often you'll see them around water. So it might be EHD, something to think about in the upcoming weeks as we enter the rut.
And hopefully it will pass like everything else. But anyway, I just heard about this from 2 weeks ago from my son, Mitch, because, people wake up in the morning and find a dead deer on their lawn, and the DOT is so overwhelmed with it that they're telling people, oh, we can't get there for maybe 2 or 3 days. And so Mitch has been going around and p- pulling these things off the lawn for these people and getting them out of their way. But anyway, it's kind of disheartening a little bit. But, you know, it's the way of the world. Who knows why it happens? And
well, actually, it's been around a long time in the South, and deer have become somewhat immune to it.
Mm-hmm.
And once in a while, it does happen in New York State. I guess there was a case in 2007. So, although short-term it'll probably affect the deer population, according to D.C., in the long-term they don't think it will.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, it's just... also, once there's frost, it kills... Supposedly it stops the disease right then and there. So, once we enter colder days, and the beginning of next week it's going to turn colder even in the Hudson Valley, so it should do it in, hopefully.
Yeah, we had an early frost a month early this year than in the past few years, but... We had an old-fashioned summer, and we had an old-fashioned, you know, end of the summer and into fall.
Fall is beautiful.
This is what happened back when I was on the farm, and you know, it's been years since we had, and people are acting like this is not normal, but this is actually more normal than we've had in several years.
And I don't know anything normal about weather. I don't think it's ever been normal.
Yeah, I
think if you went back to 1840, they would say everything was crazy, too.
Yeah. But anyway, there is no normal. I'm sorry I used that phrase.
But, yeah.
You know, it's more like it was when I was a kid on the farm.
And, yeah.
You know, we had a beautiful, I mean, spring was awesome, and then summer was beautiful. And look at the autumn we're having. And,
yeah.
And, you know, I saw autumn frogs. I was telling Ryan before, I wrote a poem two nights ago that I'm not finished with yet. I'm composing it, but it's called Autumn Frogs. And it dawned on me going down Southside Road with that light rain and that warm weather that the frogs are moving out of the mountains back down into the swamps right now. So if you see, if there was a trooper on that road that night, they would have pulled me over sure as hell because I was zigzagging, trying not to hit the poor little fellers. And if I would have told them that I was trying not to run over a frog, they probably would have arrested me just for that reason.
Yeah, maybe others. Who knows? But that's all we have on From the Forest. Thank you for listening, and see you next Wednesday from 6 to 7 p.m.
All right. Peace, everybody.
Oh, the neon lights were flashing and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd end up this way, getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year. Flowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games in an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town.